Maybe you could just ask me what else are you upset about?
Yeah, I love that. Okay, what else are you upset about?
Thank you for asking. There's this concept of third spaces. And what really upsets me is rich people who lack imagination and lack the ability to envision the ways they could spend their money to enrich themselves and the people around them. And one of the things that, like, just I lose sleep over is the notion that if you have a lot of money lying around and you're going to build yourself a big house and you're going to put third spaces, quote unquote, in your basement so that you have a billiards room or you have a coffee bar or an alcohol bar, like that is like pissing in the wind to the extreme. Because the problem with a billiards table in your basement is that there's nobody there, right? Like, you're not going to have a chance encounter with somebody new, you know? Like, name all the kinds of situations in which you want to have chance encounters with new people, but they don't happen in your house. And so I just, if there's any super rich people out there building houses with visions of their own swimming pool or whatever it is that they want to, you know, own and put in and have for themselves, just like, let go of that. Stop doing that.
Yeah. I think building community is such a form of resilience because, not to get too, you know, whatever, but under capitalism, under these systems, they want you siloed and buying stuff and not together. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it is so important to be together. I understand the drive to control and predict, especially as the world becomes scarier, but I really hope people fight it, because if you are controlling and predicting your entire environment, you know, like, growth doesn't happen there. Control happens there, and that's the only thing. And I think people think they're getting a sense of safety, but what they're really getting is a breaking down of the social order.
Yeah.
But
absolutely. Yeah. I am not buying buckets of just add water food for my basement. You know, like I'm all in on this society and we got to make it work.
We ain't throwing starfish here. Now we're having a good party. Talking about structural change. We believe the land is sacred. Beneath that vacant parking lot, where the weeds are doing their best to express the need for something different. Gonna make some space for you and me to live here all together. Gonna make it safe and fun for kids to get around the town. Gonna find me a residential pedestrian district where I can gracefully grow older. Gonna spend my remaining years sharing Boulder.
Hello, Boulder and the wider world. Welcome to the Sharing Boulder podcast. For episode 52, Shay Castle stopped in to interview me to talk about season 4 of this podcast. Shay is a longtime local journalist in Boulder County, known for the Boulder Beat, and has worked at the Daily Camera and Boulder Weekly. I'm excited about her new podcast, The Boulder Valley Frequency, which is a weekly news program that drops every Wednesday morning. If you haven't listened to it yet, pause this episode, go listen to her podcast right now, and then share and subscribe. I'm a proud Patreon supporter, and I hope you will also consider chipping in a few bucks to keep local journalism alive and well in Boulder County. I want to disclose that I paid Shay for her valuable time and expertise to have her interview me for this episode. I'm really happy she agreed to help out, and I'm proud that I'm able to support her efforts in this small way. I have one small footnote to clarify something I said in a rather careless throwaway comment. Somewhere in the middle of this conversation, I mentioned that I haven't lived in suburbia in a long time. I want to acknowledge that while I do live just a couple of miles from the CU campus and have access to several bus routes and bike paths, which allow me to live a car-light lifestyle, the footprint of where I live is very much in the character of single-family home-style suburban sprawl with wide meandering streets. So I'm sorry if I sounded sanctimonious about living in the city. I do live in a co-op of sorts. My wife and I have a blended family that includes adult and teenage children, and we are making good use of the space. We are also navigating the same housing market as everyone else, and I wish there were many more options for families like mine to live with a smaller space footprint. Okay, on to the interview. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Shay Castle.
Shay, welcome to Sharing Boulder. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Do you mind introducing yourself?
Sure. I'm Shay Castle. I'm a longtime local journalist.
Awesome. Famous for the Boulder Beat and Boulder Weekly and such. And what's your latest project?
I actually have a couple. My latest project is Boulder Valley Frequency, which is a weekly local news podcast covering Boulder County. Very quick, meant to be, you know, 15 to 20 minutes for your morning commute. And I'm also helping to launch an arts and culture publication to replace Boulder Weekly called the Caribou Current. It's under the ownership of the Mountaineer paper.
Wow. How do we learn more about the Caribou? What is it?
Caribou Current.
The Caribou Current.
Well, the next episode of my podcast will be talking about it, although I don't know when this will come out. Yeah. But it'll be on newsstands. It's a free publication, just like the weekly was, but it'll be monthly instead of weekly. And so you'll see it around.
Oh, that's awesome. I'm excited to see the first. The first issue hasn't come out yet, right?
February 5th is our first issue.
Okay. Well, good luck with that. And I'm excited to see that. I'm super excited about the Boulder Valley Frequency and have listened to every episode. And it interrupts my week a little bit because I normally listen to the headlines from the New York Times. That's my 15-minute morning podcast. But on Wednesdays, you know, it's the Boulder Valley Frequency. So listeners, if you haven't heard about it yet or listened to it yet, you know, stop listening to this podcast and go listen to that one. It's a very good production.
I feel like there's room for both podcasts personally, but totally. And I feel in great company, me and the New York Times. That's incredible.
Yeah, exactly. Great. Well, so this is the purpose of us getting together was I was sitting around contemplating putting a little monologue together for introducing season 4 of Sharing Boulder, this podcast, and feeling a little depressed about that, and it feels like a lot of work for something that I haven't gotten much feedback of any kind in previous times I've done that. And I thought, man, it sure would be nice to have someone interview me for Sharing Boulder so I can just rant a bit about why I'm doing this. So what you got for me?
Get ready. Gird your loins. No. Well, I think the first question is, it's been quite a long hiatus, 2 years, I believe. I'd love to know, you know, what happened, why, and why are you bringing it back now?
Yeah, sure. Well, I got involved with the Airport Neighborhood Campaign and found myself stationed in front of South Boulder Whole Foods collecting petitions and various other kinds of meetings, and it takes a lot to put a campaign like that together. We had a good team, but I just didn't have bandwidth to be part of that campaign and like do interviews, and you know, it's kind of a lot of work to put on a podcast, and I only have so much bandwidth. That fall, I taught a class at CU, and it was one of these experiences where I just got thrown in off the deep end and was in a little over my head, and it was a ton of work. And I got through that experience, and I just was ready to take a break. And so that took me through the fall of 2024. And then, the spring of 2025, I just, I don't know. I was kind of checked out politically and feeling like not sure what to do or how to engage. And I kind of just sat out a season and watched from the sidelines. And why am I getting back into this now? I have bandwidth and I have interest, and it's one of these things that just kind of cycles through. You know, this is season 4, which means I've taken 3 other breaks from the podcast that were not nearly as long, but so mostly just because it's like it's back on my mojo, just wants to like tackle this again.
I love that you, I mean, I don't love that you experienced this, but I think it's such a common experience of in early 2025 feeling like, oh, whoa, like I need a little bit of a break. What do I do? How do I help? I remember having that feeling too, and just being so overwhelmed politically and needing to like rest up.
I also did a project, and I just remembered that I did another podcast that was a comedy podcast, but it was a subscription-only podcast. And it was kind of like a fail, you know, like it was fun. I had a good time putting it together, but it was a lot of work, and nobody wants to subscribe to my, you know, mediocre comedy. So whatever. It was interesting experience. I learned a lot. That was one of my creative outlets at that point. So.
Hey, if it was fun, that's not a failure. That seemed necessary.
Okay.
I will always defend fun in the face of overwhelm.
For sure. Yeah, great.
I did want to do a quick update on the airport. As last that I heard, a judge had kind of put the kibosh on that effort to decommission it and convert it to housing, and Boulder announced they would not appeal that ruling. So it's kind of right now.
Yeah, well, so they dismissed the case without prejudice, which means they the city can come back and relitigate when it's legally ripe is the phrase that they used. The basic ruling was that there's no proof of injury here, and I'm probably going to get this technically wrong, but I think the big picture is that they said that it's not legally ripe, and so the court doesn't need to intervene. There's been no injury to the city. So they didn't rule that, they didn't weigh in on the question that was asked about whether or not the FAA can control the airport in perpetuity. That just wasn't addressed. That was dismissed. So the case is dismissed. Yeah. So I do feel though that we have, not taken binding grants for 5 years, and we have 15 more years of resisting that, you know. So I think it would be really short-sighted to take grants of, you know, for, you know, when you think about the numbers in terms of the land value and the size of the grants that the airport folks are asking for, it's not really a good to me, it's not a reasonable way to tie up such a valuable asset for the amount of benefit that we would get. So mm-hmm. I really appreciate city staff for keeping this policy of not taking more grants. And yeah, hopefully in the meantime, we can keep the narrative going of the airport provides very little value, in my opinion, and others in our campaign. It's not really transportation infrastructure per se. It's more of a hobbyist playground, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And having such a valuable resource that is worth, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, 350, 400 million conservative estimates, be used by just, you know, a couple hundred pilots who are still spraying our city with leaded fuel. It actually really pisses me off that we have communities that are getting sprayed with lead still. And, you know, the good news is a year and a half ago, they said that it was going to be 5 years until leaded fuel was phased out. And so we only have 3.5 years left of that. The bad news is that people who are born today in the mobile home villages right next to the runway will be 3.5 years old, mm-hmm. and will have absorbed the worst effects of the lead that is going to spray down on them between now and then. And worse is when my hunch is that 3.5 years from now, they're going to be telling us that we're just 5 years away, because they're basically saying that we're going to have the option to buy unleaded fuel at the airport, but it's not going to be the only option. Mm-hmm. You kind of actually caught me off guard. I probably should have had a few more talking points ready to go about the airport, but any follow-ups on that?
No, thank you for the update and the clarification. I appreciate that.
Sure.
And I like that you're already pissed off third question in, so we're on a good track.
It's funny because I I feel like I often, my interview style has often been very, maybe overly friendly and a little too forgiving, and my rage doesn't come out very often in this format. But
it was also a very calm and controlled rage, I would say. It was the most mild-mannered rage I've ever seen. Talking about updates, so for season 4 of Sharing Boulder, what's your vision? Who do you want to talk to? What themes do you want to explore?
Yeah, so my first interview candidate was an RTD board director candidate, Jack Rosenthal. I love interviewing candidates for the reason that they're very eager to be on a podcast, more so than other people. Other people, it's more like you have to pester and really sell the idea. And candidates generally are like, yeah, I would love to be on a podcast. And so, and then I've interviewed a lot of candidates over the years. I kind of took a break last year, but I'll probably interview candidates again. So if you're running for public office and especially like for the Senate or president, we'd love to have you on the show. City Council, obviously, would be great. But the problem with those interviews, though, is that I feel like they don't age very well. Like if I go back and listen to them, they're kind of boring and a little painful because I feel like I repeat myself a lot. So anyone who wants to give me feedback on how you'd like to see the candidate interviews improved, please send it my way. I love one of the outcomes that's great for me is, I get to spend an hour talking to a candidate, asking them the questions I care about, and you get to know them in a way that is difficult to do otherwise. And hopefully that's my set of questions aren't super misallocated or misaligned with other listeners, and we can't all spend an hour with candidates interviewing them, but hopefully that's a service that people like to get to know our local elected officials better. But the conversations that I think are really fun are the ones that with political activists or domain experts, where my goal in those conversations is just to like get them talking about whatever they're most excited about and just let her rip. And I'm just the curious questioner who's learning stuff. And so those are the conversations that I feel like I can still listen to a couple of years later, and I'm like, oh, that was a fun conversation, and I learned something that I had forgotten 2 years later. So,
getting people talking about what they're passionate about is like journalism 101. It's the best thing.
I don't know if that was my. I feel like I came up with that, but.
But that begs the question: is like, what are you excited about right now? What's exciting you or enraging you? That's another way to define passion.
Oh man, I have all of these puzzles and observations about the many contradictions of Boulder. One of the things I like to observe is we have people who say that Boulder is so full that we can't possibly let any more people in, and when you're driving around town during rush hour, that's a reasonable response to have. It feels like we're full of cars and there's too many cars, and there's maybe that means there's too many people, I don't know, but I feel like the loudest voices around this are often people who live in large houses by themselves, and we actually had this whole demographic shift that's emptying out Boulder, where we have lots of houses that sit empty, we have lots of houses that are very large that have one or two people in them. And it's an odd tension that we keep adding housing units to Boulder and the population is static. Mm-hmm. And that's there's reasons for that. And it's kind of horrifying to me that we have the same number of people in ever more housing, which is not an environmentally sustainable approach. So yeah, one of the things I'm really passionate about is sharing housing. We had a guest on the show a couple of years ago from an organization called Sharing Housing, and she's an advocate, that this nonprofit advocates for changing our cultural response to the idea of sharing housing. Mm-hmm. And there is some effort in the city, in the housing staff, to look into this. And so maybe there'll be more to say about that later this year. But my favorite nonprofit in town is Boulder. It used to be called Boulder Housing Coalition. Now it's right. Better Housing Colorado.
Okay.
And I love the notion that you take a big house and fill it with people who are service workers and graduate students and queer, and building up so much social capital in our city with existing housing stock. And man, we have so much existing housing stock that sits climate controlled and empty. And I would love to just see us make better use of that. So that's mm-hmm. that's one thing. There's a laundry list of things like that.
Well, on that vein, when you talk about adding more housing units, but the population not growing, what do you say to people who would say, well, then we should stop adding housing units?
I guess I would say we should stop adding parking, and especially surface parking. My thought about this is, people worry that that Boulder's going to be too dense and it's going to turn into Manhattan, and it'll be miserable, and we're going to lose all the character of our quirky little city. And I like to point out that Manhattan is about the same size as Boulder, 21 square miles. It has like 1.6 million people on it. And so like Boulder has 100,000, which means we could double or triple or quadruple our population, and it would be nothing like Manhattan. And I think as a city, we ought to welcome people in, especially if they're willing to leave their cars behind. And so I would love to have more opportunities for people to come to our city and leave their cars behind. And like, I would love to have, I mean, like my formula is like, it'd be great to have twice as many people and half as many cars. Mm. And so maybe that ought to be just like a coefficient that we try to like we say we're full. And so for every person we add, that coefficient has to multiply out to the, mm-hmm. to the same number. I think also, but there is like kind of implied in that question is often this narrative about being against growth or worrying about, you know, all of our markets and all of our economic understandings rely on this idea of infinite growth. And it's not a sustainable way to think about the human population. But I also feel like if you want lower birth rates, for example, a great way to do that is to move people into cities, into urban environments. Like a bad way to do it is to like only build new housing in suburbia, where everything is designed around like the concept of a nuclear family and raising kids with a yard. And I feel like there's it's like global population and the global impact of human activity is not, you can't just think of it as a local issue, especially with respect to populations. Like Boulder can grow, and it doesn't mean like we're pro-growth in terms of like trying to maximize the economic output or the GDP or whatever. Mm-hmm. I feel like, especially if growth is an idea where people are trying to find communities where they can walk around and connect and feel like they belong, rather than, I have kind of a cartoonish, hyperbolic notion of what suburbia is like. I haven't lived there in a while. Mm-hmm. But, when you have the large house and the two-car garage and you fill it full of shit and you're like, your whole life is around how can I be a consumer and get around in my car, I feel like we ought to be like encouraging people, hey, stop that nonsense and come be my neighbor and mm-hmm. and walk around with me.
And it doesn't work for an aging population. I mean, sooner or later most of us will age out of driving.
Yeah.
And if you have a car-based society, how do you get around? You know what I mean? It doesn't make sense for the actual demographics that are here, let alone the demographics we might want to be here.
Yeah. Well, if you've ever listened to the little jingle for this podcast, the last line of the song is, I'm going to find me a residential pedestrian district where I can gracefully grow older. It's kind of a mouthful, but my nephew did a great job spitting it out. Shout out to Nathaniel. Yeah, I really worry about being stuck in a suburb where the only people I can interact with are the people in my building, or the people I can get to on a shuttle bus or a taxi to drive me somewhere. And like I want to be able to walk and bike around until I can't walk and bike around, and then I want to roll around in a wheelchair and just keep interacting with my neighbors and my community. And I kind of just wish more people had that vision of being able to live in a space like that where we don't drive everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So
I lived west of Broadway exactly one time for 2 weeks in Boulder. Okay. I don't have west of Broadway money. But I was actually unhoused at the time and living in my car and traveling around. And I had a friend let me stay in an empty house a couple blocks from Sunitas, so just off of
nice.
North Broadway. And it was the loneliest 2 weeks of my life. Because it is a single family neighborhood. I would say that little area is quite suburban. It was a mile walk to the nearest grocery store. It was January, so it was dumping snow like 16 inches at a time. And I was so lonely. I never saw the neighbors except when I shoveled snow. And I did walk to the grocery store because I had to, but it was such a haul as opposed to now I live in South Boulder and I'm like 7 minutes from King Soopers, which is it's just so much more walkable. And that wasn't, I thought, when I was staying there, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm 2 minutes from Sunitas. I'm staying west of Broadway. Look at me. I'm so fancy. Uh-huh. But I hated it. It was lonely and miserable. And I know the winter had something to do with that.
Yeah.
If it was summer, it would have been a different experience. But yeah, that was my one brush with suburbia since I've left home, you know.
I've spent time in large houses, and I've spent time driving cars. I think large houses are wonderful. Like, what's better than going to a big house with a big party and getting to enjoy an evening with friends and food and all of that. I also like, because I don't drive much, when I rent a car, it's like, wow, instantaneous transportation. This is fantastic. Like, it hooks up to my phone and it's the wonderful, you know. But it's, it's yes and. Like, I feel like big houses are great. We don't all need them, and we better stop normalizing the notion that we all have to have one, because it's making us neurotic and it's killing our planet. So
just a couple of things.
just to name
just
two.
A couple side effects.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about the mindset of like Boulder's Fool. Do you still find that to be a dominant mindset? I mean, just if we look at like the city level, city council recently has made tremendous moves toward housing, specifically in the last term, but I would even say over the last several years, even more of those traditional, you know, not NIMBY types have approved a ton of housing and changed rules to allow even more housing. Do you think we've made that shift? Is it permanent? Is there still risk of backlash? What are your observations on that?
That's a great question. I would say for one thing, if all the policies stay in place and happen, we're going to see some real change in Boulder, and I'm excited about that. I kind of want to like see it through. I don't want it to get I think it's difficult to be a city council person running for re-election. You know, I was kind of putting myself in the shoes of the folks running this last cycle, because I think a lot of people still feel very squeezed and feel excluded from the Boulder housing market. And it's going to take a while for these changes it's a large ship that's slowing down and turning around, and we're trying to get momentum going in a different direction. And so I would hate for like city council to be accused of doing nothing because the changes aren't immediate. You know, we are very process driven, and these things unfold over decades, really. And so I am hopeful that if we can keep the ship going in this new direction, that we'll see positive change. But there's also an aspect of it where, when I think about the wealth disparity of people who have a single family home and the space that they occupy, and if we could visualize wealth disparity instead of in terms of dollar signs, but instead of in terms of how much space we occupy, the visualization of that is very dramatic of how many people, you know, to me it's kind of obscene that the number of people who occupy such a huge percentage of Boulder. And we've kind of nibbled at the edges of dismantling single family zoning, and that'll probably continue to evolve with a Boulder Valley Comprehensive Plan update, hopefully, and then there'll be more room to update the zoning again. But I don't see how the current policies are going to make Boulder more inclusive in terms of better use of land. Mm-hmm. And especially when it comes to the large swaths that are single family home zoned, there'll be some. I mean, there's ADUs will be nice, and some of them will get turned into duplexes and triplexes. But I feel like if all we do is what we've done, 20 years from now, we're going to see a lot of single family homes still, and they're going to still be outrageously priced, and they'll still be have an exclusionary squeezing effect on the housing market for people who'd like to live and work here.
Are there certain policies that you are either going to fight for or would like to see locally that we haven't reached yet?
I guess I don't feel like I'm a policy expert to know what exactly is the right thing. Zoning reform is kind of an easy thing to say out loud because it feels like this impediment to making better use of our land. But I think actually another structural, like it's going to require structural change. Like, it's not just about specific projects or, you know, specific neighborhoods. It's kind of more systemic. And one of the things I'm really curious about and want to understand more about, and frankly, I'm kind of like ready to be converted to. So I'm like kind of maybe intellectually susceptible, I guess. But like the land value tax idea, where I feel like our tax system is really regressive. Like we do lots of, we lean heavily on sales taxes. We just passed another transportation maintenance fee, which I support because like we need transportation and we have these political realities about how we can do taxes. But there's kind of nothing more regressive than a fee in terms of equitable taxing. And it doesn't really address, like, to me, the kind of one of the structural problems with all the way our land is used has to do with let me put it this way. It seems possible that a tax system that was based on land value could incentivize better use of our land. And one of the ironies, another one of the contradictions of Boulder is we understand that land is valuable, and we also, like, spiritually we talk about it being sacred even, and then we have just a ton of it that's just paved over and surface parking, and a lot of it sits empty most of the time. And like that indicates something structurally is wrong about the way, like, our land is actually undervalued if you think about how poorly we utilize it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
did I just like I'm not sure I even said anything coherent just now, but
I think you did. And I mean, it we're not policy experts, so it is hard to say. But when I think about, you know, normal people don't think in policy, they think in problems. So when I think about, like, particular, because I'm a big housing sharing advocate, I have four roommates.
Nice.
We were illegal until, you know, the state law overturned occupancy limits. But I think about how I want to live, which is in a tiny home community. That would be ideal for me. Or, you know, in a big old house with a bunch of people, which that is now legal. Tiny home communities really aren't under current zoning.
Yeah.
Or like a boarding house situation, which the elimination of boarding houses contributed hugely to the rise of homelessness.
For sure.
Because it was such a low cost option. These are things that they are policy without knowing. You don't even have to know that that's policy to know, like, hey, this doesn't exist anymore. And it's like, I'd live in a boarding house. I mean, I'm not sure I'm the target demographic, but you know what I mean? I would live in a shared space, and these things are still illegal. A vacant home tax, which they talked about in 2019. And I'm not learned enough to know if that's equitable or not, or what the problems are with it. But
I mean, it's easy to imagine that if you own a second home that is empty most of the time, you're an investor or you're just super rich and you like to drop in Boulder. And it doesn't seem equitable to have vacant homes lying around. But yeah.
Yeah. These are all just things that have been talked about in recent years, but we haven't quite gotten there yet.
Yeah, we haven't done anything about SRO, single room occupancy, the dormitory, or what was the word? The single
boarding
occupancy.
Houses.
Yeah, boarding houses, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, SRO is probably a better sell. But
yeah. So, yeah, we haven't addressed that at all. I feel like there ought to be, you know, the bottom rung of the housing rental market ought to be a single room with a kitchenette, and, you know, it ought to be well under $1,000 a month. And where are those? I don't see any. So yeah, I'd love to pursue that. So yeah, these are all kinds of like if these are issues you care about and you happen to be a policy expert on some of these things, email me.
There is a boarding house in Longmont, but that might be one of the only ones in the county. Which leads me to my next question. Something I observed in watching the elections across the entire county this past November was that places like Lafayette and Longmont had elected some pretty progressive on housing folks. Anne Marie Jensen, who's an affordable housing advocate, got elected in Lafayette. And I really saw some of the conversations playing out there of the like old school power guard of like, oh, we're full, we don't want housing, you're ruining our neighborhood character. And these younger folks, typically, who were like, hey, housing crisis, we should maybe do something about it. And I found it interesting because those mimicked a lot of the conversations that were happening in Boulder a few years ago. And so it seems like, you know, it's spreading out from Boulder, this realization. And probably because the impacts are spreading out from Boulder of like, no one can afford to live. Do you ever think about expanding Sharing Boulder to Sharing Boulder County?
Sharing Boulder County. Well, I mean, it's ambiguous, right? I could do it that without even changing the name. I'm trying to think if I've had any county conversations, but yeah, I think that's a great idea to interview local politicians from the nearby cities. I met a candidate for city council in Erie. And that we just started talking. I don't remember if we talked about my podcast or not, but it did start kind of stirring up for me, like, well, what would I ask this person if I had the microphone on right now? So yeah, I like the encouragement. Thank you.
Of course. Well, as you know, all these issues are regional. You know what I mean? What we do impacts Lafayette, what they do impacts us. So I just a thought.
Yeah, well, I mean, good point taken. Yeah.
No pressure. My last question is my favorite question to ask is, what should I be asking you? You're the expert on you and your podcast. I just tell stories. So what do you want people to know? What do you want listeners to know, or, you know, prospective listeners to know?
I went to a Surge event back in 2016, showing up for racial justice. And this well-intentioned woman got up and said, we should start buying houses and giving them to Black families. And I thought that was kind of sweet in one way, and it filled me with dread and despair. That was my emotional takeaway, was feeling sad about that kind of and maybe reparations look like take one family out and move another family in, but I feel like if you contemplate what I said earlier about doubling the population, and you think about what it would look like to add 100,000 people to Boulder, and you think about who might those people be, I like to think that they might be of all kinds of backgrounds, of different socioeconomic stations, cultural, racial, religious, all kinds of different backgrounds, and that if we could figure out how to do it in a way that we weren't more choked with cars, but less choked with cars and more walking and more civic engagement, that could be a real powerful way to make Boulder more inclusive. And so when I think about housing, it's the bigger question for me is like, what can we do to make Boulder more inclusive? And are we inclusive? Do we want to be inclusive? And, or should we just pivot towards security and, you know, more regulation so that people can't move here? And I feel like we ought to go all in on inclusion and helping people come to our city and benefit from all the social capital that we have here, all the high-paying jobs we have here, all the rich cultural stuff that's going on. And so I don't know if that was I didn't give that to you in the form of a question. I just said what I wanted to say.
That's exactly what you're supposed to do. It's your podcast.
Yeah,
so.
Okay. I feel like I had one more thing along those lines. Well, also, yeah. So, but another speaker got up at that same event and basically said something about how white people built the system that we live in. And it's a lot to ask for everyone else to fix the system that we built and protect. And that it's going to take white voices and white people to also stand up and be like, hey, here's some healthy ways we can dismantle these bad parts and build up more goodness in our community. And so I'm a white male in his 50s, and I'm kind of a tech bro, and so yeah, why do I need to be another voice talking about you know, giving my opinion about stuff? And I guess to that I would just say I hope that I bring on people on the podcast and amplify their voices so that they can talk about what's important to them and you know, move the needle on these issues, and that my perspective is one of inclusion and building up a better Boulder, a Boulder that's more sharing, caring, inclusive. And I also feel like if you don't want to listen to it, there's so many other good resources. So just, you know, don't feel obligated.
I don't think anyone will be here out of obligation.
Yeah, totally.
Well, great. Thank you so much for your time.
Well,
I really appreciate
yours.
It.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And Sharing Boulder season 4, now streaming.
Now streaming. That's right. Yeah. Okay.
That's great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gonna find me a residential pedestrian district where I can gracefully grow older. Gonna spend my remaining years sharing Boulder.
Thank you for listening to Sharing Boulder. Please support the podcast by sharing it with your friends and neighbors. You can contact me at linktree.com/Philip Ogren, which you can find by visiting sharingboulder.us, where you can also find show notes and previous episodes. This episode of Sharing Boulder was produced and edited by Philip Ogren. The music was created by Nathaniel Ogren and Zach Lunch. Keep sharing, Boulder!